programs. This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. With post-war tensions and casualties still on the rise in Iraq, the Bush administration is now starting to make some new moves in the UN Security Council to get more help there. Senator John McCain says the issue is, quote, time-sensitive. On Good Morning America earlier, McCain said the U.S. needs to turn things around in the next few months, and if not, the Arizona Republican warned of a very serious long-term problem.
Well, I think there's a time urgency here that in the next few months we have to turn things around. We have to restore water, electricity, all of the basic services. Otherwise, the people of Iraq will turn against us, as they are.
Whatever happens in the United Nations, McCain says it's still important for the United States to maintain a, quote, central and key role in the military command structure in Iraq. Many countries, of course, are still refusing to send in troops without a UN mandate. But in one of the largest steps so far toward expanding the process of internationalizing security efforts in Iraq, the American military has now handed over control of one sector there to Polish forces. That part of the story now from correspondent Priscilla Huff.
It was described as a historic moment. U.S. Commander Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez told assembled soldiers, it's a moment where the international community has stepped up and turned a nine-nation coalition into a 30-nation coalition, which sends an unmistakable message. But the Bush administration is also getting the message that they need more help, recognizing it may be easier to win contributions if the U.N. is in the lead. As the French ambassador to the United Nations put it, on the whole subject, we have to move fast because the situation is deteriorating. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat is reportedly saying the latest U.S.-backed Middle East peace plan is dead. According to CNN, Arafat blames Israel's, quote, military aggression in recent weeks. He also laid a lot of the blame on President Bush himself, saying he has not done enough to keep that plan alive because of his continuing preoccupation with rebuilding Iraq.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like, but on the inside, I'm all, just because I look like, doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Congress is now looking into the recent North American blackout that affected millions throughout the Northeast and parts of Canada. The chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission told the House the best way to avoid future blackouts is to offer incentives to companies to invest in upgrading the power grid. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has now overturned the death sentences of about 100 inmates in three states and paved the way for their sentences to be commuted to life in prison. The court's ruling was based on a decision by the Supreme Court, which said juries and not judges must decide if convicted criminals will be executed.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The first of four debates leading up to the California gubernatorial recall election will be held tonight. That story from correspondent Steve Fredericks.
With less than 5 weeks remaining until the election to recall Governor Gray Davis, most of the major candidates and Governor Davis will take part in a debate tonight. The first of four to be carried live on TV. Scott Dennison of the Arts Center, where the debates will be held, says things keep changing.
It's live. It's spur of the moment. It's the candidates change. The players are constantly changing as to who's going to arrive, who's going to come.
Dogs will be combing the place to make sure the location is secure. Conspicuously absent from tonight's debate is leading Republican candidate actor Arnold Schwarzenegger. The action movie star says his time would be better spent meeting the public and talking with the news media. In Sacramento, I'm Steve Fredericks.
During tonight's debate, the governor, Gray Davis, will actually get the first half hour to himself, in which he'll be interviewed by a panel of journalists. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Cartoonic Minute. On her way to Oz, Dorothy feared lions and tigers and bears. Oh, no! But they're child's play compared to critters who might homestead in your car. Oh, yes! When I come back, I'll name names. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those, too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. You think Noah had it rough managing all those beasts? At least he had an ark, but some of them might hole up in your car. According to Pennzoil survey of 16,000 auto technicians, culprits for some repairs were furry, feathery, or scaly, like chickens trapped in air filters, squirrel nests in the AC, snakes wrapped around brake rotors, and rats storing dog food in exhaust pipes. But wait, don't call the Pied Piper. Have your vehicle checked out regularly by a qualified technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartman simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program today. Broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network, coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations. Broadcasting live from outer space on Sirius satellite radio system stream 145. And on the internet from radiopower.org, live365.com, and ieamericaradio.com with archives at whiterosesociety.org. This is Tom Hartman. It happened at 3:31 p.m. on Election Day 2002 in San Luis Obispo County, California. And please, somebody let me know if I'm mispronouncing that. I've been there, but I frankly don't remember. 3:31 p.m., 3:31 in the afternoon, the voting was going on. It was the 2002 election. Just consider this for a moment. People were, you know, going to the polls and placing their votes. 3:30 in the afternoon, the polls closed in California, what, around 7, as I recall? So we're in the middle of the voting day, as it were. Certainly the middle of the afternoon. And suddenly, 57 different polling places. Now, I don't know if that's 57 polling machines or hundreds of machines in 57 different polling places. I'm assuming the latter. Got what Carolyn Kay of MakeThemAccountable.com calls a phone home moment, an ET moment. She says, for some reason, the Diebold optical scan machines in 57 precincts simultaneously had an ET moment. Now, these are the these are not the electronic voting machines that everybody is so worried about because they leave no paper trail. These are the machines where when you punch a ballot and you pop out that Chad or you mark a paper, you run them through these scanners, and the scanners count them. Well, the scanners are computers, too. And they keep track of this stuff, and they pull together this total, and then they store it on these memory cards that at the end of the day, when the vote is all done, are taken you know, in lockboxes, essentially, by people who are bonded and secure to a place where they can be counted. Well, at 3:31 in the afternoon on 2002, during the voting day in San Luis Obispo, California, County, California, the voting machines, the counting machines in 57 different polling places had a phone home moment. And somehow, and nobody knows how, on the Diebold website, the company that makes the voting machines, by the way, did you see where one of the companies that makes voting machines, I'm not going to identify which one it is, it's not Diebold, just a couple of weeks ago, the CEO of the company signed a fundraising letter saying we're going to do whatever it takes to get George Bush elected, or some words to that effect. I don't think that they were implying that they would steal the vote, but, you know, it's we're going to raise as much money as we can, whatever. Anyhow, here we have these machines calling home. And for some reason, while the election is still in progress, they summarized the vote, then tagged the file to a Diebold employee and placed it on a Diebold company website, according to Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.com and some of the folks. She had just been stumbling around the Internet, you know, looking for information about voting machines. She was writing this book, Black Box Voting. Black Box Voting is the title of the book. Blackboxvoting.com is the website. Bev Harris doing Google searches, and she comes across this FTP site for Diebold. There's a company, they make ATM machines. They also count the votes. And on this FTP site, lo and behold, she finds these files of the software. And here they just found one of these files actually had the tally as of 3:31 in the afternoon for San Luis Obispo County, California. If you want to see this, you can go. I put a link to it from my website rather than reading you a long URL. Just go to tomhartman.com. Click the radio show link. When you get there, click to the message board. On the message board, I already posted it. You'll find it right at the top of the radio show link. Also, if you want to engage in one of the more interesting and intelligent conversations on the Internet, drop into our chat room. You can find the link to the chat room off tomhartman.com, too. Now, there's only three ways, according to Bev Harris, to get a central tabulation of 57 precincts in the middle of the day. Number one, this is from an email Bev Harris sent me this morning. She said, number one, you can shut down the optical scan machines at each polling place, remove the vote database, which is stored on a memory card, get in your car, drive the curvy California Seacoast roads to the county office, give the county to the elections registrar, who will then load 57 precinct cards one by one into the Central GEMS computer accounting system and tally them up. Then you pack up the cards, get back in your car, and drive back to the polling place, restart the machines, and let people start voting again. 57 precincts would have to do this at the same moment. Unlikely. Number two, you can shut down the machines at 57 precincts, get in a phone, plug in a phone modem, and modem the results into the county's server computer, which has the GEMS tabulating program on it, and add up the 57 precincts at 3:31 in the afternoon, giving you an illegal tally taken during the middle of an election. Or, number three, while the machines are running, if they are connected to either a landline or wireless communication card, you can gain entry either by an outside hack or by a Diebold technician using inside knowledge. You collect the data from the machines using remote access while the election is in process and tabulate it on your own computer using a copy of the GEMS program, which you could download from the same FTP site that Bev Harris found, that anybody could find because it wasn't even password protected on the Internet. Telling you, this is the beginning. This is, you know, the media has been like, nothing, no big problem here. Nothing to worry about. I got an email from a listener. Rats. Thought I had it right here on top of the stack. Anyhow, I got an email from a listener. Here it is. This is from In Indiana, from John in Indiana. He says, Hello, Tom. Today I called La Pore, L-A-P-O-R-E, maybe it's La Pore, the notorious butterfly ballot Florida election supervisor. and I found her to be unconcerned about any risk in black box voting. Really, she seemed to parrot voting machine company propaganda and even characterized computer scientists and others who cast doubt as an uninformed few. She made several objections to paper verification systems on grounds of privacy, language, and handicapped accessibility, but my impression is she just fears verification systems would make her life more complicated. So she seems all too willing to believe in the advertised infallibility of black box systems, perhaps because they are unimpeachable. What he means by unimpeachable is that there are those who suggest that perhaps, and I want to say I am among them, that perhaps the vote in the state of Georgia in the year 2002 went fluey somehow. Whether by fraud or by accident, all of the polls showed that the Democratic governor and the Democratic senator, Max Cleland, were going to win by a landslide. And by the exact proportion that the polls were showing, the Democrats were going to win, the Republicans won. And there is no way to audit it because there is no paper trail. It's impossible. So anyhow, John continues. He says, if Lepore is any indication, election supervisors are in desperate need of education concerning black box dangers. Tom, you seem to be the best informed and best positioned person to kick start an internet campaign to educate every election supervisor in America on the dangers of black box voting. We also need to speed the approval of vote verification systems in time to protect our democracy in 2004. Thank you, John. I appreciate that. You know, Bev Harris was the one who first ferreted much of this information out along with Rebecca Mercury. And several other, I mean, this has been a collaborative effort. I think I probably wrote the first piece, it was on Common Dreams about a year ago, that really got a large audience about this. The one that I wrote titled something like, if you want to steal an election, just own the voting machines. If you go to tomhartman.com, and up at the very top, there's a link that says Tom's articles on democracy. You just click that, and you will find three different articles I've written on this topic over the last year. And one of the things that I pointed out, by the way, our question for this hour, corruption, this Tom DeLay situation is absolutely, totally off the wall, over the top, out of control, and just a sample.
After their embarrassing behavior over the last 18 months, the Democrats now have no credibility, none, on national security.
Yeah, so we're going to revisit Tom DeLay right after the break. Boy, oh boy, has that guy got a problem. But I just wanted to wrap up one little thing here. One of the things that, and this, again, I am just so impressed by the quality of the people who listen to this program, because I wrote this article, The Theft of Your Vote, just to chip away. It was published by Alternet, and it was mailed out by MoveOn.org to 1.7 million people about a month ago. And in it, I pointed out that in Texas, the votes went really weird with these new electronic voting machines. For example, this is a news story from the Dallas Morning News. A defective computer chip in the county's optical scanner misread ballots Tuesday night and incorrectly tallied a landslide victory for Republicans. Democrats actually won by wide margins. Now, the only way that anybody found out was that a Democrat said, hey, wait a minute, these numbers aren't right. I live in this county. And it looks to me like every vote for a Democrat is being recorded as a vote for a Republican because the Republicans are winning, and I know there's more Democrats registered here. And so they called the election company, and the election company, quote, flew in a new computer chip from Dallas to Snyder, Texas, end quote. This is what County Clerk Lindsay told the Associated Press. But it gets even stranger. There's an incredible thing here that has to do with the number 18181. I'll share it with you in just a minute. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And John in Long Beach, California. John, we've got about a minute here. And if it's going to run longer, then I can hold you over the break. What's up, John?
I'll hold you over, please, because, first of all, I would ask you this. At what point does coincidence stop being a coincidence and become a criminal offense, become fraud?
Yeah, well, John, hold that thought, and let me just share this last little bit with you. I wrote that, and this other thing. In three different races in Comal County, Texas, Republican State Senator Jeff Wentworth, Republican Carter Castile, and conservative Judge Danny Scheel all received exactly 18,181 votes, 18181. One of our listeners sent me an email. He said, pull out your calculator on your computer. Enter 0.000055, four zeros and two fives. Then press 1/X. It's a trun function. And what do you get? 18181. And he said that this is a classic number that's used for random number generating to make it look like you're actually getting real votes when you're not. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay on the phone, John. We'll pick up your call right after the break. We'll be right back.
Mom, see you later.
Jason? Who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home...
At 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well...
Let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Henry David Thoreau said that there are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to one who is striking at the root. ReclaimDemocracy.org is striking at the deepest root of today's problems, runaway corporate power. We focus on proactive structural change to restore citizen authority over corporations and return them to their legitimate role, doing business and nothing more. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really? Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kicking off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
it really is. Waking you up to the reality of the corporate takeover of America. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And we were talking with John in Long Beach, California. John, welcome back.
Hey, Tom. Well, a couple of things I wanted to touch on. First of all, you were talking about the company on the voting machines. The guy ahead of him said how he would help the Republicans. Well, since this is real news, that was the CEO of Diebold. And he sent out fundraising letters to a lot
of... It was. Was it Diebold?
Yeah, asking for...
I don't have it in front of me. I had it last week. I actually read it on the air, but I didn't remember that it was Diebold. I thought it was ESNS.
CEO of Diebold asking for $10,000 donation, and that, this is written, not verbatim, but words to the effect that he would do everything in his power to see that Georgie boy would be reelected in that state.
Now, John, let's both acknowledge that there's...
that's okay.
Yeah. John, don't we both have to acknowledge, though, that American citizens are entitled to be politically active?
Yeah, right. The other thing is, I would like to ask you this and get your opinion on it. Why are not these criminals, and when I say criminals, I mean the Bush crime family and people associated with them, why are not charges being brought against these people? They have broke the laws. They are criminals. It's just amazing to me. They are so...
Isn't it obvious, John? It's the reason why there has not been a single congressional investigation into 9/11. It's the reason why there has not been a single congressional investigations into George Bush's insider stock trading. There have been no investigations into Halliburton's no competition contracts and Bechtel's contracts in Iraq. There have been no investigations into cooking the intelligence. The reason why is because the Republicans control the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, the White House, and a good chunk of the state governments all across the United States. And the special prosecutor law has expired.
But why hasn't... How many top Democrats have you heard screaming bloody murder outside of Senator Bard, who's, that's another story. But, how many senators or congressmen, Democrats, rather, have you heard, hey, we're tired of this. We got to get together and get this guy out. I mean, I don't hear the screaming and yelling I should hear.
Well, and I don't either. In many quarters, and I suspect it's a combination of things. I mean, you'll recall that when the Patriot Act was first introduced right after 9/11, there was some real screaming and yelling coming from Senator Patrick Leahy saying, "Wait a minute, we don't need to do this." And then all of a sudden, he gets a letter in the mail full of anthrax.
Well, there you go. This is all so phony. I don't know about you, but I talk to lots of different people, and I would say 9 out of 10 people that I talk to do not like what they say. They do not like Georgie Boy.
Yeah.
And so these polls that keep saying that the people would vote for him is just nonsense.
Well, the polls are starting to show that an unnamed Democrat would beat him.
Yeah, well, that's been for a while. A long time ago, I started telling people about these voting machines.
Yeah.
And some people, and I don't mean Republicans, friends, I mean Democrats, oh, no, you're just being paranoid. There's nothing. No, they wouldn't do that. They couldn't control that.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, there you go. John, thank you for sharing that. This email is, and I'm spot there with you. Raven in Santa Fe, listening to KTRC, was the fellow who sent me this. He says, "I'm surprised that none of the programmers in your audience have called in yet about this one. When working with random numbers, we're usually stuck with pseudo-random." And he says, "If you just seed a random number generator with .000055, you will end up with 18181, the same number of votes that three different candidates got in one county in Texas on the electronic machines." This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
United Airlines will be bankrupt longer than expected as it struggles to stay in the air. This spring, executives predicted finishing the company's financial reorganization in September. In bankruptcy court last week, though, they testified to a new deadline of sometime in the first half of next year at the earliest. United Union employees signed new labor contracts, including $2.5 billion worth of wage and benefit concessions, made in the name of getting United back into friendly fiscal skies, but that may not be enough now for the company. Like many others, it is lobbying heavily in Washington this week for legislation to skip or delay next year's required payments into worker pension funds, which at United are underfunded to the tune of $6 billion.
Though a contract covering hundreds of thousands of auto workers with the nation's big three car makers doesn't expire until September 14th, the United Auto Workers want a new contract hashed out by tomorrow. Negotiators have been spotted bringing toothbrushes and a change of clothes to talks in Detroit this week, where the UAW hopes to hold the line on health care costs and is reportedly trying to win an agreement that would give its organizers greater access to auto parts suppliers. While workers at roughly half of parts suppliers once belonged to the UAW, in recent years that number has slipped below 25%.
A shocking indictment of farming in South Africa by the country's own Human Rights Commission. A report released this week based on 2 years' worth of research finds a, quote, culture of violence within farming communities in several provinces. Some examples: white farmers regularly beat and threaten black hires, often sicking dogs on them. Child labor is widespread, and some farmers pay their hired help not in cash, but in alcohol, usually moonshine, a practice supposedly outlawed a decade ago.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, to talk to the animals. And you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was having this discussion in a taxi heading downtown, rearranging my position on this friend of mine who had a little bit of a breakdown. I said, hey, you know, breakdowns, call them breakdowns, go. So what are you going to do about it? That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah, what are we going to do about the breakdown of these voting machines? It turns out that in the middle of the afternoon in San Luis Obispo County, California, all the voting machines, or 57 of the voting machines, suddenly decided to phone home and turn in the vote count. It is against the law to count a vote while an election is in process. But the files are right there on the website. You can see them. And they're time-stamped and date-stamped, and they're sent to an employee of Diebold, apparently. I can't say that this is absolutely certain. We may all be the victims of an incredible hoax, as old Louis Grizzard used to call him. But I think not. I think that we have a real problem here. And here's the issue. If these machines at 3:31 in the afternoon all called up a central place and said, here's the vote, how did they have the ability to do that? And if they could call in, then
obviously the central place could also call them and say, well, here, you know, make this the vote. I mean, I'm not sure. I may be wrong. I probably am. But I'm not sure that this number wasn't the central place telling the machines, here's what your vote tally is supposed to be. I'm telling you, folks, this is going to be huge. And if we have listeners in San Luis Obispo County, California, get on the phone. If you, wherever you are in the United States, call your county officials, ask to talk to whoever's supervising the elections, and make sure that they understand that there is a problem here. And it may have been a problem for as much as 6 years. It was about 6 years ago that these electronic machines started really taking hold, and it was about 6 years ago that all of a sudden the exit polls started becoming so inaccurate that they had to stop doing exit polls in the United States. You notice there were none in 2002 and none in 2000. Why? Because in the 98 election and the 2000 election, the exit polls showed different results than these landslide victories for the Republicans that the voting machines were counting. We use exit polls in third world countries to verify the legitimacy of their elections, to prove that nobody is cheating. And for 200 years, they've worked just fine in the United States, but all of a sudden, they stopped working. And now the cracks are starting to show. The sunlight is starting to come through them. And boy, I tell you, this is the beginning. This is just the beginning. Okay, is there a widespread, is Tom DeLay a symptom of widespread Republican corruption, or is Tom DeLay an aberration? What's going on with Tom DeLay? Oh, one other thing I want to get this out of the way real quickly. We got an email from a listener from Pat in Austin, Texas. Patrick in Austin, Texas. He says, I know you're really busy, but I wanted to tell you, relay what I witnessed this morning while getting ready for work. I was watching the Today Show on NBC and listening intently while their guest, author Gerald Posner, talked about his new book, Why Americans Slept, which exposes a conspiracy involving our government agencies, the Pakistanis, and the Saudis. It's about 9/11. Just as he was discussing the Saudi involvement, the audio was suddenly cut. The video remained there. There were definite lines of interference running through the screen as if major electrical source or radio waves. The interference read blah, 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 blah. And he says it continued until after Posner was off the air. He said, I just thought you might want to hear this, thought you might find it interesting. Thank you, Patrick and Austin. You should know, Gerald Posner is the guy who wrote the book about the JFK assassination that basically said anybody who thinks that there is a conspiracy to kill JFK is nuts. It's called Case Closed. And it looks to me like the CIA leaked enough information to Posner, who apparently is at least, let's say, favorable to these folks, about the Bin Laden investigation into their number three guy at Bin Laden, that he could put together this book. But basically, Posner's book leaves out all the things about how Bush Sr. and Bush Jr. failed to do things that could have prevented 9/11, ignored the warnings, and basically his book trashes Clinton. So, you know, Gerald Posner, in my mind, is a great writer and somebody whose writing I personally find to be less than credible. His book Case Closed for me was, in my opinion, a huge whitewash of the Kennedy assassination. And this book appears to me to be, I haven't read the whole thing, appears to me to be a let's blame Clinton, you know, part of the choir. So anyhow, a day after Howard Dean questioned America's patriotism, this is from the Express News Washington Bureau. DeLay swats at Dean. DeLay, a Republican lawmaker from Sugarland, Texas, fired off a statement calling the former governor a cruel and extremist demagogue. If this cruel extremist loudmouth, said DeLay,
is the cream of the Democratic crop, next November is going to make the 1984 election look like a squeaker. Talking about the Walter Mondale election. So Tricia Enright of the Dean for America campaign, the communications director there, she says that the ideological agenda of the DeLay-Ashcroft wing of the Republican Party threatens basic American freedoms that have been enshrined in the Constitution for over 200 years. These policies are not only extreme, they are cruel. There's a Stop Ashcroft petition now on deanforamerica.com. Let's look a little bit into the life of Tom DeLay. Tom DeLay, the exterminator turned congressman. Here's a comment of Tom DeLay's from just a little over a month ago, about 5 weeks ago, July 25th. It's amazing how quickly things change. But just to give you a little insight into what a political animal this guy is.
After their embarrassing behavior over the last 18 months, he's
referring to the fact that a few Democrats were opposed to invading Iraq. I'm going to stop calling it a war because it's like going up to somebody on a street with a baseball bat, beating them down to their knees, breaking both their legs, blindfolding them, having somebody come over and check and make sure that they don't have any weapons in their pockets and that they can't use their arms, and then asking them if they want to get into a fist fight with you. I mean, we even had United Nations inspectors go into Iraq to make sure that they were harmless before we attacked them. This was not a war. Come on, give me a break. This was an invasion. Anyhow, I'm assuming that this is what he's talking about. So he continues.
The Democrats now have no credibility, none, on national security.
That's right. The Democrats know nothing about national security. Of course, they successfully fought World War II. They successfully fought World War I. But they didn't know. They thought it was a dumb idea to invade a country that didn't present a threat to the United States. They got no credibility at all.
Just look at the record.
Yeah, just look at the record.
John Kerry, he says what we really need is regime change in Washington.
Oh, that's definitely a mistake, Mr. DeLay. Pride goeth before the fall, they say, and hopefully I'm not myself guilty of that sin. Sometimes I wonder, but in any case, here it is, writ large.
And after the Iraqi uprising at Firdaus Square, where they brought down the statue.
This was the one where they had about 100 Iraqis. And it turns out when you go back and you do the photo analysis, this was actually done on a bunch of websites. These were all people, not all of them, many of these people who were flown over there from the United States, the Iraqi expats who were aligned with Ahmed Shalabi and his buddies. You basically had about 100 people, and then you take the wide-angle view, and the entire square is completely empty. And for some reason, Fox News and CNN were in there doing close-ups on these people's faces as they pulled down the statue. There were really just a few hundred people in that square that day. This was not the sentiment of Iraq, but Tom DeLay loves to point to it.
House Democrat leader Nancy Pelosi said...
Notice how he says Democrat, not Democratic. This goes back to Newt Gingrich's use of the language of the English, use of the English language. That Democrat sounds too much like, or Democratic sounds too much like democracy. So we'll call them Democrat leaders, even though, proper English is Democratic leader. It's
House Democrat leader Nancy Pelosi said she still opposed the war.
Yeah.
And that we could have brought down that statue for a lot less.
Yeah. Surprise. Is that possible? Is that Tom DeLay? Come on. Let's continue.
And more recently, Howard Dean said he wasn't sure if the people in Iraq were better off under Saddam Hussein or not.
And I ask you, are they?
Now, yeah. When criticized for these kinds of comments, the Democrats went ballistic and accused us of questioning their patriotism. Not so. The Democrats' problem is not a lack of patriotism. It's a lack of seriousness.
Come on.
They don't hate their country. They just refuse to lead it.
Yeah, like leading it into a situation where over 2,000 of our American soldiers are wounded, arms cut off, eyes gouged out, ears, loss of hearing from being near exploded. Oh, hundreds of American soldiers died. And not to mention three or four times, minimally, the number of innocent civilians in Iraq who died
compared to who died in 9/11 in the towers? I mean, horrible as it was, if that's the criteria that they're going to make.
I will never call the Democrat Party unpatriotic, but I will call their current leadership unfit.
This guy doesn't know the English language. It's not the Democrat Party. It's the Democratic Party.
To face the serious challenges of the 21st century.
So here we have Tom DeLay saying that the Democratic Party is unfit to lead the United States. So let's see what Tom DeLay's idea of leadership is. You know, what is in his mind, you know, what is this all about? Well, first of all, you know, the redistricting thing in Texas is Tom DeLay's handiwork. I want to get back to that in a minute, though. Probably a bigger one. This is from a Tom Paine piece written by Micah L. Sifri, Enough DeLay. A few days ago, the Washington Post front paged a story linking House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, Representative Joe Barton, Representative Billy Towson, and Senator Richard Shelby to $56,000 in campaign contributions made in 2002 from a Kansas-based energy company, Westar. Now, Westar, speaking, you know, perfect for our energy crisis here. Let me read to you from a May 20th, 2002, this was before the 2002 elections, email written by Doug Lawrence, Vice President for Public Affairs at Westar Energy Company, to Douglas T. Lake, the Executive Vice President and Chief Strategic Officer. And I quote, "Right now, we are working on getting our grandfather provisions in PUHCA repeal into the Senate version of the energy bill." Give you the short form of this. We want to create the situation where we can continue to pollute and not have to pay. It requires working with the conference committee to achieve. We have a plan for participation to get a seat at the table. A seat at the table? This is the table being where Republican energy policy is being written. This being the energy policy, by the way, that Bush signed a couple of days ago, where 18,000 old power plants and oil, coal, whatnot, fire plants spitting out poisons, causing death and asthma across the United States, were allowed to actually increase their pollution levels. He not only ignored Clinton-era regulations, he reversed them. So anyhow, these guys were trying to figure out how to get at the table to make this happen. And he says, "We have a plan for participation to get a seat at the table, which has been approved by David." This is David Wittig, the Westar CEO. And the total of the package, and he talks about how much it's going to cost. And he says, "In immediate needs for a group of candidates associated with Tom DeLay. DeLay is the House Majority Leader. His agreement is necessary before the House conferees can push the language we have in place into the House bill." So these guys write their own regulations. "Shimkus is a close associate of Billy Towson and Joe Barton, who are key House conferees on our legislation. They have made the request in lieu of contributions made to their own campaigns. Tom Young is Senator Shelby's chief of staff, who is running for the House in Alabama. Shelby is a member of the Senate Energy Committee and a Banking Committee and is the lead Republican on all Senate PUHCA-related matters. He is our anchor on the Senate side. He made a substantial request of us for supporting Young's campaign. These seemed disconnected, but ultimately the plan is directed at getting a strong position at the table on both the Senate and the House side," end of quote. So these guys are sitting around planning on how they're going to buy off Tom DeLay. In addition to these Westar executives, three employees, this from a Public Citizen piece, three employees affiliated with a D.C. area lobbying firm hired by Westar also made contributions on the same date and to the same candidates as the Westar executives. Three of their Westar executives had their spouses do the dirty work for them. And then they talk about what the effect of this was. They poured money into these campaigns. And what was the result? Ann Northrup, who outraised her Democratic opponent 2-1, won with only 52% of the vote. John Shimkus, a Republican, who also outspent his Democratic opponent 2-1, won with only 55% of the vote. Senator John Sununu won a nail-biter in New Hampshire with only 51% of the vote. And Robin Hayes won with only 54% of the vote after outspending the Democrat by nearly 250%. They're helping these folks by election. I mean, even by outspending 2-1, they only win by 51%, but still they won. And so Westcar got their seat at the table. And you and I and our children get to get asthma and lung cancer and a whole variety of wonderful diseases. Thanks to Tom DeLay. You're with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Mom, see you later.
Jason? Who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home...
At 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well...
Let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
So if you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show. The computerized voting machines in the last election, our question is the theft of your vote. On our chat room here, Brain Shrub points out that H is the eighth letter of the alphabet, A is the first letter of the alphabet. So if you take that 18181, the exact number of votes that three different candidates in one county in Texas got on these computerized voting machines, and you simply convert it to letters, it becomes... Is it a conspiracy or a coincidence?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations. We were elected to the White House by one of the narrowest margins in history. 63% of registered voters.
Wait a second. You want to meet a poll registered voters?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Wait in the wall. Trouble the water.
And for those of you who saw David Suzuki's brilliant, brilliant program last night about the sacred balance on public broadcasting, he's going to be our guest in the next hour, so stick around. We're going to talk about those issues. Back to Tom DeLay. Tom DeLay's rise in politics was fueled by, guess who? Enron. Da-da-da. The rogue company. Here, I'm reading from this piece in the TomPaine.com, Enough Delay by Micah Shiffy. DeLay's rise in politics was fueled by Enron. The rogue company hosted the first fundraiser for his leadership PAC, raising $280,000 for him just at that event. And DeLay fought hard for that company's agenda of regulatory relief, which, by the way, is what made Enron possible. They call it regulatory relief. I call it handing the commons over to the corporations, neo-feudalism, the dictionary definition of fascism. And DeLay fought hard for the company's agenda of regulatory relief. Not only did Enron reward him over his years in Congress, making him its number 8 top benefactor overall, it gave two of his top aides a $750,000 consulting contract and paid his wife Christine $40,000 for a no-show job. This is the man, Tom DeLay, the man who in October of 2001, he added a provision to anti-terrorism legislation that would have prevented foreign companies from recouping billions from tobacco companies. And he took in that same time, he took in $131,500 in tobacco interest in the year prior to that. What's amazing to me is not so much that Tom DeLay is a whore, that Tom DeLay is for sale. What's amazing to me is how cheap he is, how little money. I mean, these companies invest hundreds of thousands or $1 million here and there with Tom DeLay, and they get back billions. Billions. DeLay is no stranger to the other side of the game either. On October 14, 1996, Edwin Luppinger, then the CEO of Entergy Corp., wrote DeLay a letter to thank him for meeting with him during a dinner for Republican Team 100 donors, people who gave or raised over $100,000 to the Republican Party, and discussing pending legislation. There's an issue before Congress of significant importance to our company and interest in industry. Repeal of the Public Utility Holding Act of 1935, this guy wrote. And sure enough, in September, DeLay went to the House floor. He got $20,000 from this guy, and he goes to the House floor and passes this law. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
This is
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Ooh,
you hate me?
Why don't
you
put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The Bush administration continues pushing to get more international involvement in Iraq. While en route to a surprise visit in Baghdad today, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said most top military officials don't think more U.S. troops are needed. He said it makes more sense to increase the number of Iraqi security forces. Meanwhile, British officials are reviewing if the amount of British troops in Iraq is adequate. Speaking during his first monthly press conference since returning from his annual vacation today, Prime Minister Tony Blair said British representation in Iraq is being closely monitored.
The position on troops is that we keep it constantly under review, but unless there's a recommendation that comes forward from our military commanders that they require more troops, we don't provide them. I mean, at the moment we've got around about a third of the numbers that we had at the time of the Gulf conflict.
Britain currently has about 11,000 soldiers in Iraq. The first phase of the inquiry into the death of a British government weapons expert is wrapping up today. That story from correspondent Suzanne Chislett in London.
In the first stage of the inquiry, Lord Hutton, the man charged with discovering the circumstances surrounding the death of David Kelly, has heard evidence from the advisers, family, friends, work colleagues and senior government officials, including Prime Minister Tony Blair and Defence Secretary Geoff Hoon. Dr. Kelly apparently committed suicide after being named as the suspected source for a BBC report which claimed the government sexed up intelligence in a dossier on Iraq's weapons. After Thursday's evidence, the inquiry, which has sat for 4 weeks, will adjourn until phase two starts on the 15th of September. Suzanne Chislett, London.
Four Iraqi men suspected of making homemade bombs were arrested during a raid into Crete today. U.S. troops surrounded the home of one person, then discovered a large cache of grenades, wires, and alarm clocks in adjoining houses. Colonel James Hickey is calling the raid a success.
Our aim here tonight was to detain an individual we have good reason to believe is involved in the making of improvised explosive devices here in the Crete area.
A small bomb went off during the raid, but no injuries were reported.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. Really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
New numbers out today show nearly 1 in 8 adults have been victims of identity theft since the FTC started tracking the crime in 1998. Survey also found ID theft cost businesses last year $50 billion. But the FTC said the number of new cases of identity theft is on the decline. The FCC's new media ownership rules have been temporarily put on hold. Federal Appeals Court in Philadelphia blocked the rules from taking effect. Critics argue the relaxed rules will concentrate too much power in the hands of a few large companies. The new rules were supported by most large media corporations.
My cat Boots got stuck way up in a tree. My dad saw how scared I was. He climbed up there and got it down. I feel bad. I know he hurt his back. I saw him call the doctor.
The moment of choice. What will the doctor give you, Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for muscle aches, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Boots is okay. Dad's feeling better. How great is that?
For better relief, advance to Advil.
Many emergency room doctors across the country are now expressing concerns about recent changes in federal rules which will relieve hospitals of their obligation to have specialists on call around the clock to treat indigent patients. More on the story from reporter Don Dornberg.
Since 1986, with passage of the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, hospital emergency rooms have been obligated to provide specialist care to patients who cannot pay. Dr. Arthur Kellerman, the chairman of Emory University Medical School's Department of Emergency Medicine, says there's concern that with the relaxed rules, specialists may not be available for some complex cases.
Our obligation to care to every patient who needs it won't change under these rules, but our ability to bring the resources of the institution to bear to help patients may actually be weakened by these changes.
The new rules become effective November 10th. Don Dornberg, Atlanta.
There are currently about 40 million people in America without health insurance. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Cucumbers, jazz, Gwyneth Paltrow, and khakis. Speaking of cool things, how's your vehicle's cooling system stacking up for the summer? Don't sweat it. When I come back, I'll tell you how to chill out. We've all seen the tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first, until we tested 6 tornado units, and in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your tornado unit today, or visit tornadoair.com. It's hot, and you're working hard. You can't go another foot till you cool off. Aha! Now you know how your car feels. In fact, overheating's the number one cause of breakdowns. Like our bodies have a cooling system, cars do too. They rely on radiators to keep their engines from boiling over. To properly cool, these systems must be maintained with correct proportions and levels of coolant water mixture. So this summer, think cool, calm, and collect the money saved by radiator check. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast in the United States, streaming down from outer space in the Sirius radio satellite radio system on Sirius Stream 145, and also streaming live around the world on the internet from various internet radio stations, radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. How much harm has unrestrained corporate activity done to the biosphere and to us? We've visited this topic a few times on this program. As some of you know, I wrote a book that touched on some of these issues called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. But the fellow that we have on now is a man I hold in extraordinarily high esteem, in awe. He is a pioneer in this field in awakening people to the reality of the fact that we are nature. It's not nature's out there and we're in here. It's all the same thing. We are it. It is us. We are interpenetrated by it. And if we don't figure that out, as so many cultures have, as you know, virtually all human Aboriginal and indigenous cultures have over the years, if we don't figure that out, we're going to be in deep trouble. Dr. David Suzuki, the chair of the David Suzuki Foundation, is an award-winning scientist, environmentalist, and broadcaster. He's received consistently high acclaim for his 30 years of award-winning work in broadcasting, explaining the complexities of science in a compelling, easily understood way. He's most well-known to millions as the host of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's popular science television series, The Nature of Things, and as creator of the series, The Sacred Balance, which is being broadcast on PBS, ran here last night in Vermont. I'm assuming that was all across the nation. Is that right, David? And welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Well, apparently, you know, PBS in its typical way gives a lot of leeway to each station, and most of the stations will be Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, but it is different times, so you have to look up your listings.
Ah, okay, great. Yeah. And last night was segment one, as I recall here.
That's right.
And
that's
you want to tell us about the various segments of the show? I thought it was marvelous.
Thank you. Maybe I could back up a little bit, and you know, you gave me a very generous introduction, but really, I'm a disciple of an American woman. I was just starting my scientific career as a geneticist in 1962. When this amazing woman, Rachel Carson, published a book called Silent Spring. And right. For me, that was the transforming event of my life, because here I was, you know, a scientist focusing in on, I was studying genes in fruit flies and trying to determine how genes control cell division and all this stuff. And what this book did was it said, listen, what you're studying in the lab is very powerful, but in the real world, everything is connected to everything else. She was using the case of pesticides and saying, you know, we can develop very powerful technologies to kill insect pests, but because in the natural world everything is connected, then you spray to kill insects and you end up affecting birds and trees and fish and human beings. And that really got me swept up in the environmental movement way back in 62. I thought that the issue was very straightforward. People have got to regulate how much and what they remove from the surroundings and what kind of garbage and toxic material we put back into it. But I began to realize that we don't know enough to be able to regulate how we interact with the environment. I mean, you know, when we started using DDT in the 1930s, nobody even knew there was a phenomenon called biomagnification, where you spray in parts per tens of millions, and bacteria absorb the stuff. They're eaten by bigger organisms. And by the time you get to women's breasts, you've concentrated DDT hundreds of thousands of times. Well, how could we have managed DDT properly when we didn't even know about biomagnification? So as a scientist, this posed a real puzzle. You know, we're not going to stop science. We're not going to stop technological innovation. But how do we make sure that it doesn't hit us in the head with surprise over and over again?
Well, and how do we do that?
Well, I think that we need a new perspective on our relationship with the environment. And the problem right now is that we think we're in charge and we're going to manage it all. But the reality is there is no distinction, as you said in your introduction. There is no separation between us and the world around us. We literally are made up of the stuff of the earth. And this is what I've learned from Aboriginal people. This isn't rocket science. You know, my dad always just, who never went beyond high school, when I was going to university, I used to get pretty snotty with him, and he'd say, you're nothing but an educated fool. You don't even have any common sense. And he was absolutely right. You know, this is not rocket science. We're born from our mother's bodies, and the first thing we need is a breath of air. And from that point on, to the very last breath we take before we die, we're going to suck 1 to 4 liters of air deep into our lungs and filter whatever is in it. You know, mm-hmm. That's 15 to 40 times a minute from birth to death. So I figure at my age, I'm 67 years old, I reckon at my age I've taken more than 350 million breaths and filtered whatever is in it. So what kind of creature that claims that we are intelligent would then proceed, knowing that, would proceed to use air as a toxic dump? We're not dumping it out there to be diluted away. We're dumping it straight into our bodies. And, of course, the most vulnerable people are our infants and young kids and elders. So,
well, I'm assuming, David, your question was rhetorical, because the answer to what kind of idiot would do this is George Bush. I mean, it just happened last week.
Well, it's terrifying to see the most powerful and the richest nation on earth forgetting those very simple truths. To say that the Clean Air Act can be relaxed now because we need to ramp up our energy productivity, so let those plants ramp up their output but not worry about ramping up their scrubbers and all of the things that protect the air as well. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. We are the air. Whatever we do to the air, we're doing directly to ourselves, and our children are telling us this. 1 out of 4, 5 children in North America today has asthma. Well, when I was a kid growing up in the 30s and 40s, we'd never even heard the word asthma. You know, it was a rare condition. Today, you can't go into a school class and not find all kinds of children with puffers. Well, our children have become the canaries in the coal mine, except the coal mine now is all of the air around the world. They're telling us in no uncertain terms, we're not doing it right. And the idea that we've got to keep the economy going by ramping up energy production and to hell with the atmosphere, it's just suicidal.
Yeah, it's absolutely. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you have a question or comment for David Suzuki, who is our guest this hour, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and it's 15 minutes past the hour. David is the author of the book and now the television documentary on public broadcasting, The Sacred Balance. David, you're Canadian.
I am.
As a Canadian, am I right?
Yep. I went to school in the States for 8 years.
Right. So you're familiar with the United States and our culture in this world down here, as it were. And I'm wondering what your personal sense is of the politics of the day here in the United States. And what do you think the real average Canadian is looking at us and the decisions that we're making, like George Bush's decision just, 3 days ago to allow 18,000 power plants to increase their level of pollutants into the atmosphere. Is this even on the radar screen for the average Canadian?
Well, we had a power outage as well, in the eastern part of Canada, including the capital of our country. But certainly the reaction was not that to relax environmental standards and ramp up energy production. It's been a look at the delivery systems and so on. This country is disproportionately putting out greenhouse gases and pollutants into the air. You're only, 5% of the global population, but you put out close to 25% of the atmospheric pollutants.
And how does that compare to Canada, David?
Well, Canada and the United States are right up there. The United States is number one on a per capita basis, and I think we're number two in the developed world. So, we're partners. Canada follows very much what the Americans do. The Prime Minister ratified Kyoto in November of last year, even though there was a tremendous amount of pressure from the Bush administration not to do that. We went ahead and did that, and I take a great deal of pride and some responsibility for our having kept our Prime Minister's feet to the fire, and he carried through on that. But we look at the United States. Of course, we are your biggest trading partner, although most people, including Mr. Bush, aren't aware of that. I think most American governments have thought, well, it's Japan or it's Germany or something like that. Canada is by far the United States' biggest trading partner. And we're right along the border together. You are not only our nearest neighbor, you are our greatest friend. And, I personally, having lived in the United States when I went to Amherst College as an undergraduate on a huge scholarship. We couldn't have afforded my education there. I owe America for the rest of my life for that. The friendship and the support I got while I was going to graduate school at the University of Chicago, I can't replace that. America is, a great hero to me. But I think the nature of friendship is that there will be points at which we have divergent points of view. And if we love each other, we have to respect that and listen to each other. And the thing that hurts us is that we have support. When 9/11 happened, Canada instantly responded. We had a demonstration in Ottawa where 100,000 people came out to show our love and solidarity with the American public. And money poured from Canada to New York as a result of that. And yet all of that went out of the window. When the war in Iraq was being threatened, suddenly because we felt that we should go through the United Nations, suddenly we were being portrayed in America as these terrible friends and allies.
Yeah. Well, these pseudo-French or something.
When Mr. Bush was elected, very early in his administration, he said to the world, America is going to go our own way on energy policy. We are not going to ratify Kyoto. He said very early, America's going its way in nuclear development and forget the nuclear test ban treaty. We're not going to sign any agreement on banning landmines. We're not going to go by the World Court rules. I mean, he told us in no uncertain terms, America was going to go America's way, and we're not paying attention to the rest of the world. 9/11 happened, and suddenly we're told, well, everybody in the world has to fall behind us to fight terrorism. And right. if you're not behind us, you're not with us. I don't think, you know, as a Canadian looking down, I don't think you can say, forget it, we're not paying attention to what you say until
David, I have to interrupt you here. We have a commercial break, if you can hold on out over the break. We have Jeff in Denver on the line, Dave in Pennsylvania on the line, and Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma also have calls, questions for you, David. Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with David Suzuki of The Sacred Balance. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
It's new. It's a new choice. And it's here now. It's new Levitra. Levitra Vardenafil HCL. And it's time to ask your doctor. Levitra. It's new. It's news. And it's available by prescription only. So find out about Levitra. Call 1-866-LEVITRA. Visit Levitra.com or talk to your doctor about the new choice. New Levitra. Call 1-866-LEVITRA.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, yes it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Taxes might be one of the few things in life that are certain, but taxes certainly don't have to be as grossly unfair as the political Scrooges in Washington make them. Take, for example, the massively regressive tax giveaways that Bush and his plutocratic cohorts in both parties have enacted. Having shoved the vast preponderance of this money up to the wealthiest Americans, they then tossed a political sop to middle-class families in the form of a $400 tax credit for children. They even touted this sop as deliverance on George W.'s favorite piece of political rhetoric, "Leave no child behind." That's a sweet slogan, but their delivery on it hit a sour note when it was revealed that they had, in fact, left lots of children behind. For example, the children in 6.5 million low-income working families were not included in Bush's bill. Public outrage at this exclusion has forced the Senate, under unrelenting pressure by Senator Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, to pass another bill belatedly extending the child tax credit to these children. The House, however, where ideologically extreme Scrooges rule the roost, has refused to include the low-income children. "Ain't going to happen," barked a smirking Tom DeLay, the Republican majority leader who is nuttier than a whole peanut factory. He says that low-income working families don't deserve the child tax credit because they don't pay taxes. Earth to Tom! While they don't pay federal income taxes, a disproportionate amount of their meager incomes go to pay gasoline taxes, sales taxes, and other assessments. Add up all the taxes, and the poor pay a bigger percentage of their incomes than do the rich. As for who deserves the tax credit, a million of the families Bush is scorning are U.S. military personnel, including 250,000 children of our soldiers who are on active duty. This is Jim Hightower saying, the next time Bush uses his "Leave No Child Behind" line, remember these children.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
What a beautiful world it is. What an extraordinary gift this life is. I'm sitting here in the People's Republic of Vermont looking out at the sun on the forest, and it is just speckled with green and light and little cobwebs I can see sparkling. It rained about an hour ago, and now the sun is out, and it is just awesome. And this awe in life is so evident in David Suzuki's work. And I remember, David, I first came across your work, I think it was in 98. I was in Australia, and I believe you had just been there.
Oh, yeah.
I was doing a book tour for Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, and I think your Sacred Balance had just come out. And I spoke in a venue where you had been a month before or a week before or something like that, and they said, you got to read this stuff. And they and that was my first introduction to your work.
Oh, wow, yeah. Australians have been unbelievably receptive to my ideas.
Oh yeah, it's been remarkable, and they revere you over there. I mean, I was in a number of cities, and kind of in your footsteps, unintentionally. It was quite remarkable. Anyhow, we have Jeff on the line in Denver. Jeff has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, 1-800-825-5937. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air. What's up?
Thank you. First, I'd like to say I honor and respect David the way you present everything, our follies, in such a peaceful manner.
Well, thank you.
One of the things my spiritual teachers and especially one biology professor when I got my degree presented to me to look at the things that we take for granted, the base assumptions we have in everything, like, for example, the passenger pigeons. They were so common, yet, of course, now they're extinct. And today, take a look at horseshoe crabs. And what are those base things that you might see that we just do every day that just assume, like, for example, in the Elizabethan times, they used to wash their faces with mercury, which now, of course, we see as absolutely ludicrous. Today are there things such as, say, putting chlorine and fluoride all over our environment with treated water, you know, spraying in our lawns. Are there things like that that we need to look at?
Well, I certainly think the use of chemicals is still outrageously high, because we're basically doing an experiment that science and medicine will never be able to track down. We're being exposed to over 50,000 human-created chemicals that have never been in the environment or our bodies, and we have no idea how they interact in a complex mix. But I think one that for which there is very good evidence to look for the effects of now are a lot of these substances that are involved with plastics. There are many compounds. For example, one of them is called phthalate, P-H-T-H-A-L-A. Phthalates are used in plastics to soften them, and they've been implicated as a very powerful, what they call endocrine disruptor or hormone mimic. They don't look like a human hormone, but they have a shape that allows them to bind to receptors that recognize human hormones. And the impact of many of these hormone mimics, I think we're barely seeing the consequences. One of the terrifying things to me is we all know that the age of onset of puberty in girls has been steadily declining, earlier and earlier age. But there's a cohort of girls between 8 and 10 who develop breast buds and pubic hair. And this is right off the Richter scale in terms of this decline in the age of onset. And one of the compounds that's been implicated in this are phthalates from plastics. Now, you know, plastics are ubiquitous, and God knows what the long-term effects of this are going to be, but I think we barely have an inkling of what these compounds are going to do to us.
Yeah, we are tinkering with our environment and the world in which we live in ways that we don't understand.
Exactly, and since we're the environment, we're doing it to ourselves. I think another area which I'm
David, that music means we've got a commercial break coming up against us here, but let's continue this right on the other side of it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with David Suzuki, creator and author of The Sacred Balance, among others, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A growing number of farmers are allowing wildlife to return to their land. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Across North America, farmers are backing away from rivers and wetlands, allowing forests to regenerate, and letting nature take its course on more of their acreage. Daniel Imhoff says more landowners are farming with the wild, and he's written a new book by that name.
Farming with the wild is the future of sustainable agriculture because it really starts to get it at the heart of what we want to sustain. Farming with the wild really attempts to orient a farm towards the local watershed, towards the local ecosystem, and to accommodate the whole range of native species and even the ecological processes like flooding and fire.
Imhoff's book looks at dozens of innovative farms in a variety of ecosystems, from the Louisiana Bayou to the plains of the Dakotas.
In addition to being a book about farming, it's really a book about how diverse our American landscape is, and we're really just looking at it through the lens of these farmers who are trying to have a farm that really truly accommodates the wildness.
Imhoff says many farmers are questioning some of the after effects of the so-called Green Revolution, which boosted productivity but turned their land into industrial production facilities.
What about the sedges and the grasses and the remnant oak forests in these places for the wild, too? They not only beautify the farm, they actually provide a lot of value from anything from wind or sun protection to harboring pollinators and beneficial insects to then also just allowing them to be stewards of the land.
Imhoff says farming with the wild can work on farms of any size. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying how do you do.
And welcome back. back. It's Tom Hartman with David Suzuki on the IE America Radio Network. David, I actually want to get to the topic of love with you, and love as a political force, as a spiritual force, as an ecological force, as a form of consciousness that binds us to the rest of the world. But first, we still have two callers on the line, and I'd like to get to their calls and give them an opportunity to ask you their questions. Dave in Pennsylvania has called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. How do you do? Hi,
good.
Dr. Suzuki.
Hi.
Yeah, I was watching your program last night.
Oh,
and
good.
Hope to be able to see the whole series. But I just finished reading Professor Richard Heinberg's The Party's Over, and I've been studying informally the peak oil and the use of petroleum products, gasoline, and all of that, and our culture's refusal to change and to do anything different. And I wondered what your thoughts on that are with regard to when this peak occurs, probably within the next few years, and we begin to descend the other side of the Hubbert curve, how will we react to that?
Well, of course, this is something that's obvious. I suspect Tom's book is as much about this as anything.
It is,
Tom?
Yeah, it is.
The point is, if the entire planet was filled with oil, eventually it would run out. It's a finite resource and a one-time only resource. But the reality is there are massive deposits of coal, and I think that the environmental consequences of burning fossil fuels at the rate we are going to be the ultimate factor that limits our use. Right now, we're just putting out twice as much greenhouse gas through burning of fossil fuels as the biosphere can absorb. So if we want to try to get
600,
that,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think we're putting out about 600 billion tons or 600 million tons a year right now.
Yeah, I don't know what the numbers are, but it's rounded out. It's about twice as much as the planet can reabsorb. So if we want to get back into balance, it means we have to cut energy use overall by 50%. But, of course, Canada and the United States, since we are disproportionately producing greenhouse gas, our obligation is 85 to 90%. In other words, we've got to get off the fossil fuel energy society. And there are enormous opportunities. I mean, what we're doing by trying to keep pumping the stuff out and burning it without regard to efficiency, if we become more efficient, we save money. And look at the other opportunities. Germany is now the world's leading exporter of wind power. Denmark is on its way to 50% of its energy coming from wind. Iceland is going to a hydrogen future and plans to phase out fossil fuels altogether. I mean, the opportunities for the private sector are enormous. But meanwhile, because of the lobby, we keep doing it the old way.
Yeah, it could just be an absolute huge renaissance for industry. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. We're talking with David Suzuki, the author of numerous books. There's one you wrote about Aboriginal stories.
Yes, Wisdom of the Elders.
Wisdom of the Elders, and also The Sacred Balance, which has been made into a PBS series, which is running right now. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma is on the line. Glenn, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air with David Suzuki.
Hi, Tom. Hi, David.
Hi.
this whole wind thing reminds me of a visit I paid to L.A. in about 1980, and the sky that was orange. And when I went outside, it burned my throat. It burned my eyes. I couldn't believe it was that bad, and people were just living there. And the side issue of that is that air moves across boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Canada's getting a lot of our pollutants, and in the same way, Mexico has all these power plants down just south of the border in Texas and Arizona that comes up, and now you can't see the hills in the hill country anymore. It flows across the boundaries, and even with our free trade and all of that, it seems we can't do anything about them dumping their pollution across our border.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do when it's the air you breathe? You can't get away from it. It's a terrible feeling to realize My eyes are burning, my throat hurts, but there's nothing I can do about it.
No, you're absolutely right, and this is something they've been studying in Canada. It turns out that when air comes into contact with the cold, you get the condensation of a lot of things out of the air, and they fall to the ground. And so if you look in, say, Banff National Park, which is a jewel of our park system in Canada, when the air circulates around the planet, comes into the cold glacier air above, the air above glaciers, you get precipitation, and each year you get a layer of snow that turns into ice, and it's like the rings in a tree. If you go down into the top of a glacier, you can go back in time, take out the layers, and measure what falls. And surprise, surprise, you get chemicals that come from the Soviet Union, from South America, all of the stuff that's being used in other countries precipitates out and falls when they hit this cold front. So it's called the grasshopper effect. And what this shows is even in the pristine areas of something like our national park or in the Arctic, you get dumped all of this stuff from the developing world, from the industrialized world. The atmosphere is a single system. And what we do in Mexico or in China or India has ramifications for every country, every people around the world.
David, I started out writing about environmentalism as, in some ways from a scientific viewpoint, in some ways from a cultural, these are dysfunctional stories within our culture, these Cartesian stories and so on. And in the last few years, I've ended up being politicized. I mean, here I am, I'm doing this radio program now, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, ranting about politics, because it seems to me that the we have reached a point where if we don't do something quickly, disaster looms, and the political arena actually is probably the place where we can most effectively and quickly get something done. At least it appears to me that way. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it is the place where ultimately decisions get made. The problem is that when someone's elected to office, the first priority they have is re-election, and in the United States or Canada, that's 4 to 5 years. Well, many of these problems take far too are much bigger than that. If you take global warming, for example, we're talking decades to see the impact, and no politician is going to deal with the upfront costs of doing something about climate change when they're not going to be around 10 or 15 years down the line to take credit for the benefits.
Well, and they're even denying it exists now. I mean, we've got these huge, well-funded operations within the Republican Party, these right-wing think tanks and the oil industry, to even deny that there is such a thing as
global warming. Absolutely. And, of course, the problem is the enormous power of industry that is subsidized for putting money into campaigns. In Canada now, we have an outgoing prime minister who wants to get passed before he leaves office a limitation of donations to political candidates. I think it's of the order of $1,000, and he wants most of campaign costs to be paid by the public. I mean, even the money that's coming in from the private sector in the United States now, they get a write-off on that. The taxpayer is subsidizing those subsidies payments, and yet it gives enormous power to these lobby groups. You've really got to restore the campaign funding in a way that makes
sense. Yeah, this is wrong. We need to return to democracy.
Absolutely.
David, we have a caller, another caller, Sean in Georgia, and then I've got a couple of questions for you here if we have time. Sean, thank you for calling the Tom Hartman program, and you're on the air.
All right, thanks, Tom. And David, I have a question for you concerning I've been doing a little bit of research on alternative sources of energy, and I came across an article in Discover magazine a couple of months ago about a process called thermal depolymerization, whereby they take basically waste and turn it into oil, and basically what they were trying to say is that it is actually reducing the amount of pollution, the amount of carbon emissions by, I'm not exactly sure how they justified it, by not pulling carbon out of the earth, rather using the carbon that is already in the system. They're reducing the amount of carbon emissions that are causing the problems with global warming.
Well, I don't know what the term means, but are they just talking about high temperature? Are they just burning it?
No, what they're doing is basically masticating it, crushing up solid wastes with plastics, municipal waste and whatnot, and they run it through they were very vague about the process of actually how it works, but they ran it through a process that turned it into basically oil. It was
I read the same article, oil. Sean. It seemed to be some sort of a catalytic process, David. They're actually doing this in a turkey farm somewhere here in the United States, where they're taking all this waste, not just the turkey waste, but the waste from the slaughter process and the food waste, and all, and they're running through this thing and they're producing oil with it, and they're making all kinds of incredible claims for it. That's what Sean is talking about.
Well, I think we're at a point now where if we take the problems of climate change and global pollution seriously, then there's enormous opportunity to look at the way we've done things in the past and begin to resurrect or restore the old richness of the planet. The city of Toronto, which is 4 million people, has reduced its greenhouse gas emission by, I think, 60%. Now, most of that is by capping their dumps and capturing all of the methane. Methane is a much more powerful greenhouse gas, and they've captured all their methane, and they're now burning that methane in the process, reducing their carbon emissions and generating heat out of it, and reduce them way below the Kyoto target. Well, that's just a very simple thing. I think that there will be all kinds of ways, possibly even treating coal or the Alberta tar sands in ways that will release the energy without releasing greenhouse gases. But we've got to put the effort into it.
Yeah, and as you say, this is not rocket science. David, one of the folks in our chat room, Brainshrub, says, do you see the creation of a new eco-spirituality, and what are the manifestations, if so?
Well, in my book, I say that there are a number of layers of needs that we have. It's not, you know, we tend to think the economy is everything, and if we don't have the economy, we're not going to survive. Well, this is nonsense, of course. We are animals. As biological creatures, we need clean air, clean water, clean soil, and clean energy. And when you've got that assured, then it turns out that we have another level of need, which is social. And as social animals, the amazing discovery I've made that scientists are finding is that we need love in order to be fully human. And it occurs in our childhood that love is what allows us to empathize, to care about others, to be a part of the human family. And if we don't have love as children and infants, we grow up crippled psychically and physically. We die a lot faster. If we assure strong families and communities to maximize love for children, then it turns out that we need spirit. And I think this is probably the biggest need we have in North America today, is a need. I'm not talking about religion or God. I'm talking about that spiritual sense of being a part of the world, of being a part of nature, of needing sacred places, of knowing that humans aren't the dominant creature that have to control and manage everything. So these are, I think, we have a nested series of needs that should come before everything else. Once we work to create a way of life, a society in which we guarantee those things, then we start saying, well, how do we do that? By ensuring a strong economy.
Yeah, that's brilliant. You're reinventing Maslow's hierarchy of human needs.
Exactly. That's where I got the idea, was from Maslow.
Yeah, and he did a very good job. I would suspect if Abe Maslow was still alive, I think he died in 74, that he would absolutely agree with you.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. Yeah.
Gee, I overlooked the environment in that, and he certainly. My understanding is that when you were a child, you spent several years of your childhood in the prison camps that were set up for Japanese Americans and Japanese Canadians during World War II. Is my recollection correct?
It is true. I'm a third generation Canadian. My grandparents emigrated to Canada at the turn of the 19th century. My mother and father were born and raised in Canada, never been to Japan. But when the Second World War broke out in Canada, as in the United States, we were deprived of all rights of citizenship and shipped off. Now, what happened to us in Canada was the British Columbia government wanted to get rid of half of its yellow peril, and so they said, look, when the war comes to the end, either you get the hell out of the country and go back to Japan. Well, for us, it wasn't going back to Japan. It was a foreign country. Or you get out of the province and go east of the Rocky Mountains. And so, because we're Canadians, we ended up in Ontario.
I see. I'm still, you know, boggled by that experience. I'm wondering in the we have about a minute and a half left here in the program, David, and I'm wondering if you see the possibility of any sort of a return to that with the policies of this administration.
The great thing about democracy is you guarantee rights and freedoms, freedom of speech and thought and gathering together. The only time those rights matter are in times of crisis. Amen. And if you can't guarantee them in times of crisis, then you don't have a democracy that's worth fighting for. And the thing that bothers me is that Canada, I can't say anything for the States, but in Canada, every time we've had a big crisis, we've failed the test. Instead of saying, look, we've got to, these are Canadian citizens, we've got to ensure those rights, we then invoke all kinds of heroic measures to get these people away, and too often it's been based on racism and bigotry, not real threat. And so, these times of stress are times of real test of what a democracy is. And I'm afraid we have a very fragile democracy.
And the upside, I suppose, in the final 10 seconds here, is that we now are in a time when we may be able to make a change.
We have a tremendous ability to communicate. Here am I, a Canadian from the west coast of Canada, and I'm speaking to your audience, which is completely continental. It's an enormous opportunity.
Yes, I agree. Wonderful times. David Suzuki, thank you so much for being on our program.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
It's a true honor and privilege to have you here. David Suzuki, be sure to check out the rest of his program, the Sacred Balance, or the continuing series on public broadcasting. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine!
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
It's new. It's a new choice. And it's here now. It's new Levitra. Levitra Vardenafil HCL. And it's time to ask your doctor. Levitra. It's new. It's news. And it's available by prescription only. So find out about Levitra. Call 1-866-LEVITRA. Visit Levitra.com. Or talk to your doctor about the new choice. New Levitra. Call 1-866-LEVITRA.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
The Tom Hartman Show.
Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board. The doorbell rang and I answered the door. Just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush, what a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah's Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And in our next hour, by the way, just so you know, those of you, I know some stations end the program here at the end of this hour, and some carry us for another hour. And those who do, in our next hour, we're going to hear from Bernie Sanders, and we're going to be finding out what's all this Mercury retrograde business. We're going to be talking with the world's leading expert on Mercury retrograde and author of the only book on the topic that we could find anyway. And because Mercury is retrograde right now, what does that mean? Or does it mean anything at all? Who knows? I honestly don't have a clue, but we will find out. I think it's going to be a very interesting conversation. I was in Australia. In fact, I mentioned to David Suzuki, our guest in this hour, one of my trips to Australia. And there's a friend of mine, Jeff Guest, up in North Queensland. In Petford, he runs this program, and Jeff is in his late 70s now. He was one of the stolen generation. He was taken from his parents when he was 2 or 3 years old, taken from his mother because he was half white, half black. And Jeff really knows the countryside. I mean, he ran away from the sheep farm that he had been sold to as a 6-year-old when he was around 10 or 11, and he knows how to live out in the forest or out in the bush. And Jeff and I were talking one time, and I said, "I would love to talk to an Aboriginal elder who really, really still was." And he said, "Well, there's very few of them left, but there's this one guy, King Tommy George, up in the north." And he offered to take me up to meet him. And it was a 4-day trip through the Australian bush in this Land Rover that was outfitted with 40-gallon tanks of gas with a lever that you could throw in, with an air breather that stuck up above the top of the car. It was actually a Toyota Land Cruiser, whatever it is, so that we could drive through rivers where the water literally came up to the windows. We finally, after 4 days, got up where King Tommy George was, and he wanted to sit in this dry riverbed, which was his sacred space. And we're sitting out there, and I started asking him about nature and the natural world and the Aboriginal relationship to nature, and he had to have Jeff translate this for him. They had this long conversation in some language I didn't understand. Finally, Jeff says, "I had to explain to him what you meant, because in his language there is no word for nature. Everything is nature. We're nature. It's nature." He says he thinks your idea is crazy, that there's something out there called nature. It's all us. Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news. Exactly there. From the world.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The Bush administration continues holding talks this week in an effort to garner support for a UN resolution to authorize the creation of a multinational military force to help with security in Iraq. One of the main stumbling blocks, though, has been the U.S. stipulation that it retain military command authority. After meeting with his Italian counterpart at the State Department today, Secretary of State Colin Powell again denied speculation asking the U.N. for help now is a diplomatic flip-flop for the Bush administration.
We've been floating the idea of a resolution for many weeks. The president has always been looking toward the next step with respect to international efforts to support the reconstruction of Iraq.
With ongoing security problems and rising costs, U.S. lawmakers have been putting increasing pressure on the White House to get more nations involved in post-war Iraq. Meanwhile, the Bush administration has now finally set an official price tag on just how much it's going to cost to provide security and rebuild Iraq, bowing to months of pressure from top congressional lawmakers who have been demanding some solid numbers. That story now from correspondent Priscilla Huff.
$60 to $70 billion, that's what the White House will request to fund the mounting costs of reconstruction and the military occupation of Iraq. According to the Washington Post, the estimate is roughly double what the Bush administration had hinted at before. The chairman of the U.S. Senate's Foreign Relations Committee has been demanding a five-year budget for Iraq for months. One number Chairman Lugar had heard from the U.S. administrator in Baghdad, L. Paul Bremer, that just rebuilding the water and electrical supplies in Iraq could cost billions. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
And U.S. troops have killed three Iraqi guerrillas who were reportedly laying explosive devices on a road northeast of Baghdad. Military says the men were killed last night. Lieutenant Colonel William McDonald says those guerrillas were digging holes in order to plant explosive devices along the side of the road when they were killed by soldiers.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
A federal judge has now ordered Attorney General John Ashcroft to appear in a Detroit courtroom to explain just why he violated a gag order. The Detroit Free Press is reporting today U.S. District Judge Gerald Rosen has given Ashcroft only 14 days to explain why he commented on a terrorism trial taking place in Detroit earlier this year. Ashcroft had publicly commented the Detroit suspects had some advanced knowledge the September 11th attacks were going to take place. He later retracted the remark and was then warned he had violated that gag order.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Powell, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO. 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
After 2 years of waiting for the Senate to confirm his nomination, Miguel Estrada has now formally withdrawn his name for a seat on the federal appeals bench. Senate Democrats had filibustered the nomination and are now calling the withdrawal a victory. New York Senator Chuck Schumer warned the White House the Senate will block every nomination they feel is leaning too far right.
Miguel Estrada is an unfortunate victim of a White House policy of not cooperating with the Senate and stonewalling in the appointment of judges. As long as the administration continues to do this, we will continue to block the judges they nominate that are far beyond the mainstream or those judges that refuse to answer questions.
President Bush released a statement saying, quote, Mr. Estrada received disgraceful treatment at the hands of the 45 senators during the more than 2 years his nomination was pending. He was referring to the 45 Democrats who stalled the nomination. Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy says with Estrada's withdrawal, the president will hopefully learn to consult with the Senate on his nominations. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Ask Shirley MacLaine, and she may tell you she was Marie Antoinette or even Zeus in another life. Believe that or not, I'll tell you about some real automotive reincarnations when I come back. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. You won't need a seance to see where your old car might have gone. Just drive to your new car dealer, because 12 million vehicles were recycled last year. Thanks to Open Loop Recycling, any scrap of steel liquefied in the process melting furnace can be reformed into any shape. That means fenders of old Crown Vicks or Caprices might reincarnate as hoods of brand new Mercedes. And like the mythological Phoenix, steel conquers its trial by fire and is actually strengthened in the recycling process. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast. From sea to shining sea here on terrestrial radio stations, from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite stream 145, and broadcasting live on the Internet from several Internet radio stations, radiopower.org, live365.com, and ieamericaradio.com. Yes, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. Mercury went retrograde last week, as I recall. Maybe it was the end of the week before that. And what this means, retrograde means it's moving away from us. And I have a publisher who will not sign contracts when Mercury is retrograde. I've actually been through this, you know, where this guy's published some of my books over the past 15 years. And I have another friend who actually won't answer the phone when Mercury's retrograde, for his business line. He'll answer his personal line, but he will not. His business line rolls into voicemail for 3 weeks, about four times a year. And I'm curious about this. I claim no great knowledge of astrology. A few interesting experiences with it, I suppose. But so, you know, it's Thursday afternoon. Our Thursday session is always to try to
push the boundaries. You know, let's not just talk about politics here. Let's get into things beyond that. Maybe everything you know isn't what you think it is.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Maybe. And Chrissy Blaze is the author, is an author, astrologer, and teacher of astrology, metaphysics, and the spiritual sciences. And she's the author of Mercury Retrograde. And Chrissy, I was really impressed. I have a bunch of books on Amazon.com, and it's really rare to see an author whose book, all of the reader reviews are full five stars, you know, full right up there at the very top. People love your book, and I'm very pleased you could be on the program today.
Hello, Tom. Well, it's my pleasure to be on the program. Thank you. Thanks for the compliment about the book.
Well, it looks great. Tell us, in a nutshell, what does Mercury retrograde mean and why should we all duck? Or shouldn't we?
Well, actually, I don't think we should. As people probably know, astrology is the study of the influence of the planets on human behavior. And when Mercury, of course, rules communication, it rules our consciousness, our mind, our reasoning powers. And it's kind of like the light in our eye, if you like. And when it goes retrograde, what it means is that it's appearing to go backwards in the heavens. Of course, the planets don't really go backwards, but they appear to because of an optical illusion. And it's a time when, because it rules communication, all our communications seem to go haywire. But there's another side to it as well, which I can go into, which is a very positive side.
And that is?
And that is that I believe, and this is my theory, really, which I expound in the book, that the universe is telling us at these times to get off the wheel, to take a step back and to reevaluate our lives and see where we're really going. You know, life is so fast now. We're all on this sort of treadmill, and where are we going? And it's a way of sort of re-looking at our lives and rethinking our lives at this time. We'll get
Chrissy,
frustrations as well. You know, they come, but sometimes, if we kind of think outside the box at these times, then good can come out of the frustrations, too.
Right. We're speaking with Chrissy Blaze, the author of Mercury Retrograde. Her website is chrissyblaze.com, chrissyblaze.com. And Chrissy, the way I always thought about it, and you know, I, with no training at all in this, is that things seem to go in cycles. You know, the heartbeat, you've got the systolic and just diastolic, you've got the, you know, it fills and it expels. There are these rhythms, the tides. I mean, all of life has rhythm to it. And it just seems entirely appropriate that if part of the time we spend out there doing stuff, communicating, sending things out, doing, you know, that there should be a time when we withdraw, when we come within, and we look within, and we get more introspective and more thoughtful, and that there might even be some sort of external dance that the universe is doing that supports that rhythm.
Yeah, this is my own theory, really, exactly. In fact, all the planets do go retrograde, apart from the Sun and the Moon, but they all have a retrograde motion. But Mercury particularly affects us, I think, now, at this time in our history, when we're kind of crazy. Everything's so fast. You know, the Internet is a very, very sort of mercurial thing, and emails are extremely mercurial. And communication has been really, really speeded up to a point where sometimes we don't know where we're going. You know, everything's so fast. So this Mercury retrograde, because we've felt it more in the last really few years, 10 or so years, it's because I believe our society is wrapped around this sort of speed of communication. And it's even more important, these Mercury retrograde times, to take this step back.
Yeah. And we're in the midst of one of these right now. This my publisher that I mentioned, who I'm not going to name, but because I don't think he'd want to be outed about it. But
mine's the same, by the way.
Yeah, maybe we have the same publisher, I don't know, who's so very into this, is of the opinion that anything that you initiate, anything that you start when Mercury's retrograde will ultimately fail. And therefore, he won't start things. But he also suggested that it's a great time to think about what you're going to do and then begin it, like the day after Mercury goes direct. First of all, does that make sense to you? And secondly, when is Mercury going to go direct this month?
Well, it goes direct on the 20th of September, and then it goes retrograde again in December 17th.
Okay.
Actually, if you look on my website, people look on my website, it has all the dates, and it was just kind of useful to know because your publisher's exactly right. It's a great time to be planning and thinking, and because sometimes, you know, you're kind of caught in a routine, and when during Mercury retrograde, you can think, well, do I really want to be doing this job, and do I really want this relationship? It's that kind of time.
You know, Chrissy, even if astrology is complete nonsense, this makes sense. I mean,
yeah,
just
exactly.
to build these rhythms into our lives.
Exactly. Well, obviously, yeah. I don't think it is nonsense, but I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't.
It can also be a good time to start things because there's always these exceptions. For example, mm-hmm. if you're born when Mercury was going retrograde, and again, you can check that in my book. It has all the dates, and people can find out where Mercury was when they were born. Then it can be a very good time for you. So, you know, that's something to consider too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one last question here, Chrissy, and then I've got to get up back to politics. But and bringing back to this, tell me about the impact of Mercury retrograde on George Bush, on the war, on the prosecution of the war, on these kinds of things. What do you see as the astrological significance of this time and of the and what's going on with these people and these kind of events in the world that has to do with this?
Yeah, if I can just go back about 3 years, mm-hmm. actually the presidential election was the last day of the Mercury retrograde period, November the 7th, 2000, if you remember that fateful day. And
yes.
You remember
and boy,
all the
communication gets screwed up.
Oh, it was really the worst day they could possibly choose, but I sometimes think perhaps Bush chose that day on purpose because, you know... Otherwise, God
well,
might
I think
have
the founders
in.
Actually chose that day for the election. That decision was made 227 years ago.
Yeah, but it was interesting because although we could see the tremendous things that happened for weeks and weeks afterwards, and you know all the ramifications, it kind of proved that a small thing that can happen on Mercury retrograde, like a small decision you make, can change the world forever. So it is affecting. You know, communication and politics and the whole world at the moment. How it's affecting people, it's kind of a general influence. I mean, it's a time when people have to be very careful what they say. You know, it's a kind of time when if you're having negotiations at a high level, then things can get misconstrued.
Like we are with Korea right now.
Exactly, yeah. It's not a good to have peace treaties, very important things going on, but If these things have to happen, and they will, of course, then one should be very careful what one says and sort of think about the ramifications of it and how the other person is accepting what you're saying and this kind of thing. The time to
you
be
know,
very
Ronald
careful.
Ronald Reagan had an official astrologer. I mean, not official in that everybody knew about it, but Ronald Reagan had an astrologer. Nancy was the main mediator there. And all of the major decisions that he made were timed with the advice of this astrologer. And I'm wondering if you know if the Bush family is into that sort of thing, or do they think that that's, hocus pocus or something?
I would imagine that they would think it was hocus pocus, but I have no idea, actually.
Yeah,
I would imagine
yeah.
that.
Yeah, they're more the church-fearing type, and Ronnie never went to church before he became president. So, okay, great. And finally, Chrissy Blaze, how can folks contact you if they want to learn more about this? What's the best way to find out about your book, Mercury Retrograde?
Well, they can go to my website, which I think you said is chrissyblaze.com, C-H-R-I-S-S-I-E-B-L-A-Z-E. Or there's a 1-800 number, if I could give it out.
Sure.
Which is 1-800-800-1354.
Perhaps a year with some significance? just a good
yeah.
number, huh?
Could
great.
Have been.
Chrissy, thank you very much for being on the program today. Chrissy Blaze, the author of Mercury Retrograde.
Thank you very much, Tom.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for coming on. An email here from Jamie. Tom, I love your show. I listen every day at work in New Hampshire. Jamie has a great idea. He was listening to the, I assume it's a he, maybe it's she, I don't know. Anyway, Jamie was listening to the program and heard the Brett Bercy segment. Brett Bercy being our friend down in South Carolina, who was arrested outside a Bush campaign speech because he dared to stand on a public sidewalk along with thousands of other people, although they were all holding signs saying, you know, Bush 2004 and we love George and all that kind of thing. And he was holding a sign that said, no war for oil. And for that crime, he was arrested and charged with threatening the president.
He was not even inside the venue. This wasn't about heckling the president or interrupting the speech. This was about spoiling a photo op. And Brett is being prosecuted by the son of Strom Thurmond, as I recall, the federal prosecutor there. So anyhow, Jamie says, I love your show. I listen every day in New Hampshire. I've been following Brett Bursey's ordeal, and I have an idea for getting close to Bush with protest signs. I went to a big anti-war protest in Boston in March and made my own sign with graphics from various anti-war sites. Anyway, people should try this. I'm going to do it if Bush ever comes to my state. Make a sign that says, impeach Bush, or something of that nature. And then, you know, one word above the other. The word impeach, and then the second column, the second line is Bush. And then I have a strip of paper. He says shelf paper works as long as it's not stuck on too tight. That is the same color as the sign's background. On this strip of paper, you print something like re-elect. Get nice red, white, and blue graphics from Republican websites. Lightly stick re-elect over impeach. Carry this sign to the Bush event, plane landing, whatever. And after you are safely surrounded by pro-Bush hordes, remove the re-elect portion of the sign and hold it up high and proud. That's a great idea, Jamie. I'm not sure you would survive, though. I mean, the crowd may turn on you. You never know. But it's really going to be interesting to see how this plays out. How long can they keep people from speaking out? How long can they keep Americans in terror? I don't think it's going to be very much longer. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
Tough. You got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when. Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dent is strong, so the pain is gone.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program, with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
hear that Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
You ain't seen nothing yet. American politics. Wait until 2004, folks. Change is in the air. There's blood in the water, as they say in political circles. That is to say, change. Are politicians in trouble? Are there problems that are facing some of these folks? I got an email here. I promised you a little clip from Bernie Sanders. Bernie has a piece out that's up at the top of BuzzFlash today, and I want to get into that. I'm going to do that right after the bottom of the hour, though. But first, I have an email here from John in San Diego, California. He says, "I'm not an economist, although I've learned a lot recently, especially from your program. I'm now developing some questions about the economy regarding the term economic growth." He says, "I hear it a lot, and I have no strong idea what it is. How is it measured? How much is good? What is the downside? What affects growth and for whom? Is it perpetually sustainable? What happens when it fails? Everyone stands around and nods and regurgitates these buzzwords like a bunch of idiots or a bunch of guys standing around the open hood of a muscle car where no one wants to admit that they have no idea what they're looking at. Well, I have no idea what I'm looking at. Can you do a show segment that talks about some of the basic fundamentals of our economy and how they work and or work together?" And then John says, "P.S. I've read on equal protection. I'm giving it out this Christmas as a tax-deductible business gift to my clients." Bless you, John. As an introduction to growth, to the idea of economic growth, let me just play a very short, this is a 27-second ad that Adbusters prepared, and it speaks for itself just as a starting point here.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Brilliant. And that's the point. That's the point. The conventional wisdom in the United States is that growth is good. And in biological systems, and sometimes it's very interesting to look at biological systems to get some, you know, wisdom. And in biological systems, there is only one, at the cellular level of biology, there is only one type of organism that believes that growth is good with no limits. And it's called cancer. And many suggest, I got a nice echo there, John. And many suggest that the whole notion that growth should just continue forever, and that the prime value of our economy is to have continuous and never-ending growth, is to tie growth in some ways, to tie our economy in some ways to something that behaves like a cancer. Our economy has been driven, the growth of our economy has been driven by a number of variables. One of them is the discovery of energy. We, you know, the Romans, they literally burned up all the wood in Italy.
And they had to build ships and start conquering the rest of Europe to get wood. There was, in the year 222, as I recall, there was this huge currency crisis in Rome because they couldn't smelt silver anymore because the wood cost so much that by the time they smelted the silver was not as worth as much as the wood that went into smelting it. So they needed energy. So anyhow, when America was discovered in 1867, as I recall, Colonel Drake drilled the first oil well in Titusville, Pennsylvania, and they're the first self-producing oil well, the first gusher. And we had this explosion of growth, and we've had explosions of growth around the world as a consequence of people finding resources. The other main resource that has fueled growth has been the intellectual resource. People invent things. They do the creation of radio, the creation of television, the creation of the internet. This is all, it appears, to be growth. But it's also possible to have a very healthy economy that is actually not growing, that is homeostatic. But you have to start at a healthy point. That's the key to it. I'll explain that right after the break. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
United Airlines will be bankrupt longer than expected as it struggles to stay in the air. This spring, executives predicted finishing the company's financial reorganization in September. In bankruptcy court last week, though, they testified to a new deadline of sometime in the first half of next year at the earliest. United's union employees signed new labor contracts, including $2.5 billion worth of wage and benefit concessions, made in the name of getting United back into friendly fiscal skies, but that may not be enough now for the company. Like many others, it is lobbying heavily in Washington this week for legislation to skip or delay next year's required payments into worker pension funds, which at United are underfunded to the tune of $6 billion.
Though a contract covering hundreds of thousands of auto workers with the nation's big three car makers doesn't expire until September 14th, the United Auto Workers want a new contract hashed out by tomorrow. Negotiators have been spotted bringing toothbrushes and a change of clothes to talks in Detroit this week, where the UAW hopes to hold the line on health care costs and is reportedly trying to win an agreement that would give its organizers greater access to auto parts suppliers. While workers at roughly half of parts suppliers once belonged to the UAW, in recent years that number has slipped below 25%.
A shocking indictment of farming in South Africa by the country's own Human Rights Commission. A report released this week based on 2 years' worth of research finds a, quote, culture of violence within farming communities in several provinces. Some examples, white farmers regularly beat and threaten black hires, often sicking dogs on them. Child labor is widespread, and some farmers pay their hired help not in cash, but in alcohol, usually moonshine, a practice supposedly outlawed a decade ago.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
The best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
A wrench has been thrown into my machinery. Now the world is not as it seemed. A tear has been made in the fabric of what I thought was reality. Now I can't call an apple a fruit with any confidence. And I can't call a tiger a cat, because you can't call George Bush a moron. Apparently there's something wrong with that. Evidently he's highly educationalized. He's sharp as a hammer, a nail. He's not to be misunderestimated. He's been to Hartford and Yale.
Yes. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Now, what is growth? Is growth a good thing? Let me first of all play you a little clip of Alan Greenspan. The guy yelling at him is Bernie Sanders. We'll get to Bernie in just a second. And Greenspan is promoting the idea that growth is a positive value. That growth in the economy is something that we should all be working for, that this is American and apple pie, that saying that an economy should not be growing is like saying that the sky isn't blue, or that chlorophyll is purple or something. Anyhow, here's Greenspan with his thoughts on this.
Congressman, we have the highest standard of living in the world.
No, we do not. You go to Scandinavia and you will find that people have a much higher standard of living in terms
That's
of
Bernie.
Education, health care, and decent paying jobs. Wrong, Mr.
May
Greenspan.
May I answer your question?
You sure may.
Thank you.
Bernie gets a little out of control every now and then. Anyhow, here he continues.
A major industrial country, we have created the most advanced technologies, the highest standard of living for a country of our size. Our economic growth is crucial to us. The incomes, the purchasing power of our employees, our workers, our people, are by far more important than what it is we produce.
Now, there is the key of the philosophy. Our economic growth is crucial to us, and our income is more important than what we produce. I would submit to you that in that, Alan Greenspan, who is a devotee of Ayn Rand, was actually initiated into the objectivist school of thinking in Ayn Rand's apartment in New York City back in the 1950s, that Alan Greenspan is wrong, and that his policies are proving that out. He, in fact, about a month after he gave this speech, there, I don't have the clip for this one, but he actually came before the United States Congress and said that he was wrong in some regard. He said that he had thought that the market was a self-regulating mechanism, and he said, but I was wrong. He had thought that bookkeepers would keep things square. But anyway, with regard to the idea of growth and should an economy grow, here's the key to it. If you think of an economy as something, let me back up just a little bit. In our society, we tend to think that what we do all day long is we make stuff. We produce goods and services. And then what we do, and that's like our input into the economy. And in fact, the average American worker, there's about 100 million average American workers, a little over 100 million, produces a little over $61,000 a year worth of stuff. Okay, so what we do is all day long we make stuff or we provide services, and that's our input into the economy. And then when we're not putting into the economy, it's time to take out of the economy. You know, after work, on the weekends, the rest of our lives. And so during that time, the way that we take out of the economy is we consume the goods and services that everybody else is making. So you've got this cycle or circle where part of the time we're producing and part of the time we're consuming, and it's all about goods and services. That's the model of most contemporary or many contemporary economists. Now, the model that ancient people have used and the model that many very forward-thinking economists are looking at instead is one closer to what David Suzuki was talking about, and it works like this. What we do is, well, let me just back up a little bit. If the whole point of producing goods and services and then taking goods and services, why do we do that? Why do we run on that treadmill all day long? The reason why is because the theory is that if we produce enough goods and services and we consume enough goods and services, we'll get security and safety. We will live in an environment where we can have love and we can have happiness and we can have a clean world and we can raise our children and we'll have security and safety. And we try to acquire these things by stuff, by goods and services. Ancient economies, those economies that your ancestors and mine, every single one of us, that our ancestors lived in thousands of years ago, and that many people today still live in, Aboriginal and Indigenous people all over the world, have a different idea than we do. And their idea is that what you make all day long is safety and security for everybody in the community. And then what you take out of the community is safety and security. And if stuff gets made along the way, well, that's cool, but it's not necessary. It's why progress isn't a prime value. It's why people are willing to say, I remember talking to Robert Wolfe. He was a psychologist and sociologist who was hired by the Malaysian government to go in and interview the Senoi people and find out why they were lazy. These were hunting-gathering people, and they were, you know, in the jungles of Malaysia. And the government wanted them to work on rubber plantations and was saying to them, hey, if you'll, you know, stop just hanging around in the jungle, in the forest here, and work on these rubber plantations, we'll give you money. And with that money, you can buy pots and pans and guns and toys and all kinds of stuff. And the Senoi said, nah, thanks, but, you know, we kind of like life the way it is. And they literally were living the way people were living in the Stone Age. And so, you know, Robert went in to talk to them and had this extraordinary awakening experience that he writes about in his book, Original Wisdom, which is, in my opinion, one of the finest books that has been written in the 20th century. And what he discovered was that they were, you know, that progress wasn't one of their prime values. So my suggestion is that rather than economic growth, our prime value should be safety and security. Now, if the economy can grow in a way that doesn't harm the world, because we really are up against the edges of our biosphere now, then that's okay. But if we're able to produce, if we're able to produce by growing our technologies, by growing our intellect, but not necessarily growing our population or growing our consumption of the natural world, and see, these things get all blurred in the minds of the power companies and the Republicans. If we're able to produce more and more safety and security for people, then we are enhancing the standard of living of the world. We are improving things along the way. And that's this clip that I've got with Bernie. I'm going to get to that in just a second. We've got Matt in Detroit on the line, though, wants to make a comment about the current topic. Matt, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You're on the air.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
I guess somewhat pertinent to this is I read an article in the Detroit Free Press yesterday about the AFL-CIO launching the Working America.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like would be somewhat like the AARP for older folks. It would be an organization for people in the workforce, whether you're working or not working or union or non-union.
That's brilliant.
So as you talk about some of these ideals, you know, how do we get there? And I suggest to other listeners to look into Working America and to become a member. Apparently, there's going to be, you know, like a dues and things like that. But obviously, the government's not looking out for the average worker.
So Matt, do you have a website for this?
It's a workingamerica.org.
Workingamerica.org.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I guess they haven't, you know, formally come out with, like, the due structure and things like that. But the AFL-CIO gave Mr. Sweeney, you know, the powers to actually formalize it.
Yeah, that's great. I will join tomorrow morning. I mean, if it's available, I think
it's wonderful.
It's
not available yet, but supposedly it will be in the very near future. And it'll be should be quite a powerful organization lobbying-wise. It's similar to, like, the AARP.
Great. Matt, thank you very much for sharing that with us. I appreciate your calling in. What is safety and security? What I would suggest that safety and security have to do not with the Republican values of whether the rich are getting richer or whether there is more and more frenetic industrial activity simply for its own sake. We've seen how that fails. But instead, the values of safety and security have to do with having everybody having health care, everybody knowing that their food is safe, people knowing that the air they breathe is clean, people knowing that their food is not contaminated with chemicals, that these plasticizers that are mutating the human race, are, that there's some regulation of industry. This is not a new idea, by the way. Franklin Roosevelt was promoting this in the 1930s. Let's hear what Bernie Sanders had to say. This is from his discussion with Alan Greenspan. Now keep in mind, now that you understand the difference in worldview between these two men, that Greenspan is thinking the purpose of an economy is to grow, and the way that you measure that is that the stock market goes up and wealthy people get wealthier, and then eventually poor people will get wealthier too, the trickle-down effect, the theory, which has been so just totally discredited over the years, over and over and over again. And Bernie, on the other hand, Bernie Sanders, my congressman from the People's Republic of Vermont, the independent, is suggesting that, no, the purpose of an economy and the purpose of a government in the economy is to provide for safety and security. And if along the way economic growth happens, that's fine if it enhances safety and security. Just listen to this dialogue, this little interchange. It runs a couple of minutes, but it's fascinating.
Mr. Greenspan, I have long been concerned that you are way out of touch with the needs of the middle class and working families of our country, that you see your major function in your position as the need to represent the wealthy and large corporations. And I must tell you that your testimony today only confirms all of my suspicions. And I urge you, and I mean this seriously, because you're an honest person. I think you just don't know what's going on in the real world.
See, what we're seeing here is Bernie articulating this difference, literally a difference in world views. So Bernie continues.
And I would urge you, come with me to Vermont. Meet real people. The country clubs and the cocktail parties are not real America. The millionaires and billionaires are the exception to the rule. You talk about an improving economy while we have lost 3 million private sector jobs in the last 2 years. Long-term unemployment has more than tripled. Unemployment is higher than it has been since 1994. We have a $4 trillion national debt.
Now, notice all of these things, with the exception of the debt there at the very end, have to do with basic safety and security issues, whether or not people have the ability to live. And even the debt does, ultimately, because the debt, when we pay our taxes, we're paying interest on that debt. A good chunk of your tax dollars are going to pay interest on the debt that was run up in large part during the Bush senior administration when the SNL debacle happened and Neil Bush made millions and all of us are literally still paying for it. But I digress. Let's get back to Bernie.
1.4 million Americans have lost their health insurance. Millions of seniors can't afford prescription drugs. Middle class families can't send their kids to college because they don't have the money to do that. Bankruptcy cases have increased by a record-breaking 23%. Business investment is at its lowest level in more than 50 years. CEOs make more than 500 times of what their workers make. The middle class is shrinking. We have the greatest gap between the rich and the poor of any industrialized nation, and this is an economy that is improving. I hate to see what would happen if our economy was sinking. Now, today, you may not have known this. I suspect that you don't, but you have insulted tens of millions of American workers.
Now Bernie has laid this out, and he says, here's how we view it. This is what we think is going on, and I think he's honestly trying to educate Greenspan here.
You have defended over the years, among other things,
the abolition of the minimum wage, one of your policies, and giving huge tax breaks to billionaires. But today you reached a new low, I think, by suggesting that manufacturing in America doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where the product is produced. We lost 2 million manufacturing jobs in the last 2 years alone, 10% of our workforce.
Now, see, this gets back to the same, this is the same issue that the Clintons were making. Now, listen carefully. I mean, this isn't going where you may think. Bill Clinton kept saying, we're creating new jobs. And the Republicans kept saying, and the progressives actually mostly were saying in response, yeah, but they're jobs at Burger King. They're low-paying service sector jobs because Bill Clinton signed GATT, which produced the World Trade Organization and the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, and all these jobs got shipped overseas. And it looked like it created an increase in economic opportunity, an increase in economic activity, like it grew the economy. And, in fact, if you look at the numbers, it did grow the economy. But did it enhance safety and security? No. And that's the point Bernie's making.
Walmart has replaced General Motors as the major employer in America, paying people starvation wages rather than living wages, and all of that does not matter to you. Doesn't matter if it's produced in China, where workers are making 30 cents an hour, or produced in Vermont, where workers can make 20 bucks an hour. It doesn't matter.
And see, in Greenspan's worldview, and unfortunately, the DLC Democrats, many of them, most of them, I think, are the same worldview. This is, you know, the Democratic Leadership Council, the folks who the DLC is funded by corporations, depositables. Let me get back to the clip here.
You have told the American people that you support a trade policy which is selling them out. Only working for the CEOs who can take our plants to China, Mexico, and India. You insulted Mr. Castle. Mr. Castle, a few moments ago, a good Republican, told you that we're seeing not only the decline of manufacturing jobs, but white-collar information technology jobs. Forrester Research says that over the next 15 years, 3.3 million U.S. service industry jobs and 136 billion in wages will move offshore to India, Russia, China, and the Philippines. Does any of this matter to you? Do you give one whit of concern to the middle class and working families of this country? That's my question.
And Greenspan's answer was essentially, everything's fine, the economy's growing. So it's important to understand when we talk about economic growth what we're really talking about here. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
Tough. You got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them who, what, where, when. Questions. They're the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 for more information. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains.
Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
Make the doctor's choice your choice. For better relief, advance to Advil.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody. What do we do with those folks? We arrest them. They are jailed. In some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday, from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
They're coming to take me away.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Here's how it would work. If you think of it as the purpose of an economy is to serve the people who make it up, rather than to serve a small ruling class. Now, this is the basic clash of worldviews. You have to understand, this is the core clash of worldviews. The reason that the Republicans and the cons started 8-10 years ago ranting about how the Democrats are declaring class warfare is because they are the masters of class warfare. Because they want to keep as much of the economy for themselves as they can and to allow the middle class to collapse. And they saw it coming, and they, you know, try and take away the argument of the other side. But here's how it would look. If we were to say, we want an economy that serves the safety and security needs of our people first. And if we can do that successfully, we'll also then generate what you would call economic growth. Because the only reason that we want to have economic growth is so more people can have jobs, which means safety and security. So if you start out, if your starting point is that everybody had a job who wanted one, then there's no need for growth. As a pure factor, of course, there's always going to be growth because there's always death, right? Some businesses are going out of business, some businesses are coming into business. New technologies are coming up, old technologies are falling away. But what the cons have been doing is whipping the working poor and the middle class with this idea that there's got to be economic growth, otherwise you won't have a job. And with the lie that, and therefore we've got to have tax breaks for the rich, more tax cuts for the rich, borrow more money from our grandchildren and give that money to the rich right now, quick. And, you know, yeah, so the rich build factories in Taiwan. Well, don't worry about it. Just because it's in Taiwan means you can buy that stuff cheap at Walmart. Well, gee, I'd be willing to pay an extra dollar for a $10 item at Walmart if I knew that that I could get a $15 an hour union job. If we simply understood the core thing, that this is about safety and security, that's the purpose of an economy, then we could redirect the focus of our tax policies and our governmental policies to help build an economy that works. And we can do that. This is an old democratic value. It really and truly is. Our program today was produced by Joe McPherson in Georgia and Louise Hartman here in Vermont, and engineered in Detroit by Seth Stryker and John Lucas and Steve Damschroeder. Thank you very much for being with us today, and tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday. For Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.